Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're winning two tickets to HF Festival. This Saturday, September 21st, Nationals Park. The show's going to feature the Postal Service, Death Cab for Cutie, Incubus, Bush, Garbage, Jimmy Eat World, and so many more. It's a great, great lineup. Tickets and more event information available at thefandc.com/events, courtesy of IMP. A local football team has a bright future. Kondorian Murad want to help you with your future as well. The exclusive sponsorship of this show is Kondorian Murad. So they can help update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you. You'll get a discount. kmlawyers.com. It is time for your Beltway Blitz, covering the Nats, the NFL, and the Commanders. So let's start you off on the diamond. Dave Jagler has been on the call of a couple of debacles against the Mets here lately.
No more Mets, please.
So we're good on moving on from that series, Dave. Whenever you're ready, thanks.
Well, the one thing about the Mets, I will say this, is they're giving off a little bit of a 2019 Nats vibe in this respect. They were 22-33, which is pretty close to 19-31, and they've had a heck of a second half. And with what Jose Iglesias has done, was talking to their folks, they're like, it's just what Parra did for the Nationals in 2019, midseason pickup, kind of, you know, leading the clubhouse, and, you know, the OMG thing is kind of their version of what the baby shark was. I'm like, oh, all right, I can maybe buy what you're selling. I don't know if they have Scherzer and Strasburg atop the rotation, but Manaea's been pretty good. If they get in, they're going to be a tough out. I will say that. So the Nats ran into a buzzsaw. Unfortunate enough to see him again.
Yeah, so one of those things, Jags, where I'm watching the game last night, and DJ Hurz is pitching, and I think there was a changeup about, you know, 8 inches off the plate that got dumped into right center field for a hit. Yep. A bloop down the right field line that Dylan Cruz actually made a great play to short hop and hold to a single. A seeing eye ground ball and hit the glove of C.J. Abrams. It wasn't like they're banging them off the walls and hitting a bunch of nukes for a lot of those crooked numbers. It's just one of those didn't feel like your nights. How do you assess nights like that for someone like DJ Hurz, who's looking for positives?
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at the big picture of the season and say this kid has been a tremendous positive. Unfortunately, because they've limited his innings, he's only thrown, you know, 80-some innings in the big leagues this year. And so when you give up a touchdown, and three of those runs scored, by the way, after he left the game, his ERA was in the 3.5s after he pitched three scoreless innings. By the time the day is done, it's at 4.3. I mean, it jumped almost a run with that touchdown. So, I mean, yeah, it's easy to say last night was a rough night. But, you know, the first time through the lineup, he looked really good. I think over the big picture of the season, this kid has been a tremendous positive. Now, are there growing things that he has to do? Yeah, he needs to be more pitch efficient, get deeper in the game. He's got that effectively wild thing going on where he can kind of lose control and then dial it in. And last night, a couple of walks hurt him. He's going to have to improve the command. But clearly the stuff is there because when he's in the zone, he gets swings and misses. He gets a lot of strikeouts. So from what we thought he might be coming into the season to where he is now, I'm not going to let one bad inning ruin that. He's had a very good season.
Jags, I wanted to get your thoughts on some news in the rotation. So Trevor Williams is coming back and is going to make a start, and then they're going to go to a six-man rotation, it sounds like, for the last couple turns through the rotation. So I guess a two-parter. First, on your thought on the six-man idea, and then second, this will sound silly, but, and I know he's making $6 million, but it's kind of admirable to me that Trevor Williams at 32 on a bad team that's, you know, wasn't going anywhere, like with maybe a couple starts left in his arm later in the year, scratched and clawed all year to get back at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think as far as the six-man rotation first, this is all about the other guys. I mean, we've been seeing with Parker and, you know, some up and down, and Irvin some down, now up the last couple. Hurz, all these guys are well over, you know, innings totals that they've ever pitched before. So, you know, whether instead of having three starts left, maybe they have two, or in the case of Hurz, one. So this is kind of looking at the big picture of those guys, trying to get them to finish the season and not have to quote-unquote shut them down. So that's part of the six-man rotation. And as far as Williams, I mean, I think this whole thing kind of took longer than we thought it would. But at this point, you know, coming off the end of a two-year contract, he needs to be out on the mound to show that he's healthy going into the offseason, hoping that someone can bring him back. I mean, he was so effective early in the season as kind of that five-inning pitcher. Now, he signed with the Nationals to be a starting pitcher. I don't know what team is going to look at him and say, you know, after throwing 60-some innings, hey, we're going to give this guy 150 innings next year and give him a bunch of money. So maybe he's back to that swingman role that he was successful with when he was with the Mets a couple of years ago. So I think it's important for him just to show that he's healthy, and maybe there's some value there about a reunion with the Nationals. He could be a guy to step in the rotation, but you know, they've never really had a true long man this year, and he could be someone who fills that role, and certainly a veteran to help the young guys now that Corbin's going to be departing. Could be a good thing as well.
Jags, I like Tenna. Just what I see, that you know he's probably maybe better at second right now than he is at third defensively, but I like his at-bats. What does he look like to you with 500 plate appearances, or give or take, next year?
Well, the question is, what position is he going to play defensively? I mean, mm-hmm. I think you'd like to see 500 at-bats because he hangs in there against lefties. They've been playing him against lefties. So it's not like a situation where you'd say, well, we have to platoon him. He gives you a good at-bat. So I think there's some potential there. But the question is where? I mean, we know that they like Garcia at second base. Third base is an open spot, but he has struggled there defensively. So I think you've got to find out whether that's a utility role or is there some DH in there. But he's definitely put himself in the mix to look at going forward.
Dave Jagler will be on the call tonight. Nats, Cubs, and Wrigley Field. He and Charlie Slows can be heard right here on The Fan at about 7 o'clock. Jags, thanks for the time. We appreciate you.
Okay, guys. Take it easy.
See you, buddy.
Be good. Bye. Let's keep the blitz moving. And talk about the NFL. We spin around the National Football League with our buddy Mike Jones of The Athletic. Mike, what do you make of the New Orleans Saints scoring on every possession so far and being 2-0 with a quality win against the Cowboys?
Man, I don't know, because I saw week one and said, well, it's just against the pathetic Carolina Panthers. And then when they went out there against Dallas, you start to wonder, is this team actually for real? When you talk to people during the offseason, some people wondered if maybe this was Derek Carr's last shot to be able to hold on to that job, and if he would wind up finishing out this year as their starter, just based on how last year went for them. Very disappointing. They get a new offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, obviously was working with Kyle Shanahan, the son of Gary Kubiak, another Mike Shanahan disciple, and he has just infused that offense with life. They have the weapons, but then you look at their defense as well, which I think has held teams to like 14.5 points a game, ranking among the stingiest as far as yards gained. They have a really well-rounded squad. Now, again, it's 2 weeks, so we won't get too worked up about it, but this is a really big test for them this week. I know that the Eagles wet the bed against the Falcons on Monday Night Football, but it's still a talented team. If they can go out there and they don't have to score 40 points, but if they can go out there and beat the Eagles or look very good as they're competing, then I think you'll have to say that, yeah, they are a team that really can contend in this division and maybe in the conference.
Similar question here, Mike, for the Chargers. Their strength of schedule thus far has not blown you away, right? They beat the aforementioned Panthers, and right, they handled the Raiders in week number one, although the Raiders coming off a surprise win in their own right. But you look at this, and I guess I'm asking, when do we kind of go, when do we kind of get rid of any asterisk or the yeah, but with them? Like, they haven't beaten any good teams just yet. Pittsburgh this week, which would be interesting, Kansas City in 2 weeks. But when do we kind of take away the label of, yeah, who have they beaten? And they're there for real. What do they have to do to kind of prove it to folks?
Well, I mean, I think if they come out of this first quarter of the season and they have a winning record, I mean, we'll see how they give the Chiefs a fight, then I think you can say, hey, they are a quality team. Their defense is really good. I think it's like 6 or 8 points a game that they're giving up. That's it. And, you know, obviously, they're running the football really well. We haven't even seen Justin Herbert start slinging the ball around a whole lot and have a big passing game. They haven't needed it. So if Jim Harbaugh can go out there, say they get a win in Pittsburgh, and then they can give a tough fight to the Chiefs, then we'll say, hey, they are improved. I don't know how far they can go and what they'll do against the tougher competition, but this recipe is working for them, and we'll see how long it carries them.
What team that is off to a bad start has surprised you the most and are you most worried about?
I don't know. I think I'm a little bit surprised by the Ravens in the way that they've looked, but they did lose their defensive coordinator and they lost their defensive line coach and their linebackers coach. So that's 3 talented guys that were the brains behind their operation. And now they're giving up 25 points a game. That's not what we're used to seeing from a Ravens defense. Their offense is actually racking up the yards. They're, you know, gaining more than 400 yards a game, but they're just very middle of the road scoring-wise. They've got to get things clicking there. And, you know, Mike Shanahan used to always say, don't rush to judgment before the first four games of the season are in the books, especially now because these teams don't play in the preseason. So if they can get things shored up on their defense, then I think they're going to be okay. It's going to come offensively. A little bit concerned also about the Bengals. They always start slow, but, like, you know, if you get in a hole, one of those two teams, if the Ravens are 0-3 or if the Bengals are 0-3, then it gets really tough to compete in this division because you have, you know, it's a knockdown drag out with all the teams that face each other right here. And so it's going to be hard to go on a run.
Mike, thank you as always, man.
All right. See you guys.
Appreciate you, buddy. Hit that local 53 sounder. My God, that's Earl Forsey's music. And here he comes on the Beltway Blitz. Earl, how do you feel right now? Kind of a vibe check about Monday Night Football at Cincinnati.
Wait, did you say Monday Night Football?
Yeah.
You know what my music this week is? That's my music this week.
Look at that. Look at
that's
that.
That's what it is right there. This week, what do we expect? Look, it's a big game because it's Monday night. We have seen a couple of weeks of Jaden Daniels, who's looked pretty good. I mean, this is, you know, record aside, which is pro sports. Look, record counts. But record aside, this season was about mainly have you found a quarterback? And you can't say 2 weeks in, but, you know, so far so good. The best of the rookies. I know you guys have been talking about it this week and for a couple of weeks. So he's done the job. All you can ask, it would be nice if they can score some touchdowns. Kind of an important thing, I think, in the NFL these days. But this is a – we go through this now every year, guys, where the first month is just chaos in the NFL. The first 2 weeks have been amazingly chaotic around pro football. You just heard Mike talking about, you know, the Ravens could be 0-3. This is a team. Everybody's Super Bowl pick. They're still – everybody thinks they're the best 0-2 football in NFL history, 0-2 team. But, you know, this is where we are. The Miami Dolphins, now without a quarterback, maybe now for the rest of the season, one of those hot picks. So we don't know. The Cowboys got slaughtered by New Orleans, who now the Saints all of a sudden look like, you know, they're, you know, world beaters. What we should see this week is a team that goes in there and does – I don't want to say doesn't get embarrassed. That's probably a bad term. But this is a potential setup because it's Monday night. It's in Cincinnati. That's kind of a tough place to play. A loud building. They've got a really good quarterback still, even though he's still trying to battle back from last year's injury. And Joe Burrow. Oh, they have a receiver that could torch you, and they've gotten, you know, beat up by receivers already the first couple of weeks. So you kind of want to brace yourself for this, but. This is also the nation's first look at Jaden Daniels, and if he should play well, if they win this game on Monday night, we've heard a lot of national talk, all these shows about Jaden Daniels for a while now through training camp and early this season. Watch out, because you know that could go up to 11 if he plays well and they win Monday night.
Oh, no doubt. This story is going to be awesome come Tuesday. What about the
defense?
Yeah,
maybe Ron will have something to say about it as an analyst on NFL.
I'm quite sure he will.
Well, you know, they got a quarterback now. Okay?
I would have taken him.
Are you more worried about the corner position or the lack of pressure from the edge?
You've talked to me all summer about this. What I keep bringing up, the secondary was always a concern of mine. I think one of my other concerns, offensive line, that's been okay. But Jaden Daniels is, I mean, everything's coming out quick. He's doing a great job. So that was obviously part of the plan. Let's not sit back there all day. Let's just do something quick and cover up that deficiency. The secondary is just, I don't know what they do, Grant. They just don't have the players in the secondary. You need defensive backs that can cover receivers. They seemingly can't find one still. And, you know, the Emmanuel Forbes injury opened the door for a guy they signed this offseason who may have been worse. It's going to be a problem all year. Unless they add more players and guys who somewhere are not playing football that are suddenly better in what they have, this is going to be a problem. Yes, you can make up for it with some pass rush, and I know that was a topic with Dan Quinn. I'm going through the stuff right now. I'm going to use some of that on Countdown to Kickoff. What you can do, it should be a strength of your team, and it's not. That is a concern, but I think that comes around with – the interior of the line playing better and Payne and Allen. I mean, you've got to have them, you know, be a force inside. I know that hasn't happened statistically yet, but no matter what, that secondary guys, they ain't changing. The players back there are not changing, and that's a concern because they had a rookie torch them last week, a guy in his second game in the NFL. What's Ja'Marr Chase going to do this week with Joe Burrow? I cringe to think about what could happen.
Earl, I wonder what your interpretation is of this. When Dan Quinn was talking, and it was a thoughtful answer, and I certainly appreciate it. I'm not necessarily criticizing him. I'm just reading into it here a little bit. When he said, we don't want to force the ball to Terry McLaurin, kind of putting words in his mouth, but that was the theme, right?
Yep.
Where I'm going, if Terry was that great, you would force it to him because it wouldn't matter. Like, you do what the Giants just did for Malik Nabers. You would do what Kevin O'Connell is going to do for Justin Jefferson. You do what McDaniel's going to do for Tyreek Hill, and so on down the line. I appreciated that answer because it's, you know, reflects about Jaden Daniels where the offense is, but I'm kind of going, if you in your eyes he was that awesome, you would force it to him.
Right.
That was kind of my interpretation. I wonder what yours was.
And forcing is an issue because what do you mean by, quote, forcing the ball? Now, Malik Nabers was getting open, so, you know, you're just throwing them the ball. What, you know what, 18 times was it for him last week, targets? It's crazy. So, and that's the thing. If forcing the ball to McLaurin means he's not getting open – and you'd have to risk a turnover to do that, then that's more of a receiver problem, right, than an offensive scheme problem. So no one wants to hear it, and I know, you know, the Commanders Nation on X and all the social media don't want to throw their guy under the bus. He's our guy. He's given up so much. But, you know, Terry is a professional, and I know it's a new quarterback again, but, you know, same year, same time next year, basically, for him. So they're going to have to get some chemistry going. At this point, I wouldn't worry too much, but it is concerning. The guy's got 39 yards receiving. Your number one guy, your number one receiver has not done much. But, guys, you know, I can look around the NFL, and we've seen Travis Kelce has not put up great numbers this year so far. And I know that's Kansas City. It's a different situation, but it's happening all around. I'm not that concerned because I kind of trust in Terry McLaurin. Before I go, real quick, because I know we're at the end.
Yep.
This week, this is a full circle game. I mentioned, Riverboat. But you know what? This is the rematch, right, from 2020. And this goes back to the draft when Chase Young was number two pick and Commanders lost a year before that and, you know, the whole Miami thing. And they lost a chance to draft Joe Burrow. Look where we are now. Joe Burrow has the still obviously lingering effects of the wrist injury. Young is in New Orleans. The top of that draft, Jeff Okuda in Detroit, he's already gone from there. Number three pick, defensive back. Andrew Thomas has kind of been a sort of a bust with the Giants, their offensive tackle. Tua may never play football again. And Justin Herbert is now J.J. McCarthy in the pros. You know, he's throwing 15 times a game. This is where we are with that. So they've come full circle. This is the kind of circle around. You play them every 4 years game. Man, are these teams in different places. And we'll see what happens Monday with Joe Burrow potentially, you know, maybe never right again. I love Joe Burrow, and he's already been to a Super Bowl. You can't take that away. But there's a weird way, and maybe the Commanders 4 years later are in a better place at quarterback than they were back then. We'll see.
Couple AFC Crazy, championship appearances, Super Bowl, and they just look like a different team now.
It would be hard to not take Burrow right now, but if I gave you the option, two guys you're drafting, will you take Burrow or you take, you can have one or the other, Burrow or Jaden Daniels, right now, where they are, what you know about them, who would you take?
Burrow. Easily.
Right. Okay, well, I don't know if it's easily. if it's easily.
I don't, but you're right.
Health, you do take Burrow.
Health notwithstanding, right?
I mean,
that's the part that makes it maybe not easily, but I think Burrow is a top three quarterback in the league.
Yeah, the variable is the wrist. The variable is a young quarterback where 10% of them do anything.
Right. Let me take the other layer. Everybody thought, well, you should have gone Tua at number two. How does that look now? Wouldn't you take what you have now over what Miami has right
now?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've stunk for four years. I mean, it's been four terrible years that we had to sit through. But yes, I never was a Tua guy anyway.
More than four, Grant. More than four.
34, I think.
It's like 32.
Since that draft. All right, we'll listen to you this weekend. Earl,
see you, buddy.
Okay. Forcey, boys and girls, can you play the Monday Night Football theme one more time on the way out? Attaboy.
There he goes. Yep.
We got to get those chimes going, Darius. We got to hear those a few times.
Ask and you shall receive. Looking forward to it.
Monday Night Football. Your boys will be there in Cincinnati. The Commanders and the Bengals. Grant and Danny on the Fan. That there is your Beltway Blitz. Next, speaking of Jaden Daniels, He's played two games so far. Has he been better? About what you expected? Worse than you thought? That'd be hard to imagine, really. You might have had some really lofty expectations. We'll dive in on that next on G&D. In 90 minutes, we'll give away tickets right here on Grant and Danny to the Caps 50 Fest. Third Eye Blind's performing. Past Capitals, current Capitals going to be there. It helps kick off their season, 50 years of Caps hockey. Alex Ovechkin needs a 45 or so goal season to surpass Wayne Gretzky.
Wouldn't that be nice?
He is in his sights, man. He needs one more Ovi-like big year, and he can pull it off this season.
I was chatting with our buddy Derek Forrest, DC News Now, the other day about this. Just these come up a lot, but this happens as you grow older. I'm old enough to remember all of the Gretzky milestones when he passed Gordie Howe, when it was beyond absurd that he was going to play in Los Angeles because that's like what he and his family wanted when he left that Edmonton dynasty behind, and how ridiculous that record seemed because it was from a time that we don't have anymore, where it was easier than it's ever been to score. The name of the game was getting up and down the ice, and it was odd man rush versus odd man rush. It was everybody was fast breaking all the time. And those Edmonton teams were beyond stacked. It was like, if you played there during that time, you're probably a Hall of Famer playing next to Wayne Gretzky. And Ovechkin, in a much harder era to score, is going, hopefully, knock on wood, to walk Gretzky down and surpass that record. It's stupid, dude. Like, there's only been a couple of those in DC history where when you're done, you're number one at the top of the list. Art Monk did it, and there's a chance that Ovechkin does it. A pretty good one. It's amazing.
41 goals behind Wayne Gretzky on the all-time list for Alex Ovechkin. All right, let's get into Jaden Daniels. We got Frank Schwab coming up, Yahoo Sports, 5 o'clock, about 30 minutes out to lead us around the NFL ahead of Week 3 getting started with Thursday Night Football tonight. Want to have a little opportunity to take your temperature on Jaden Daniels. We'll do that on the MGM National Harbor listener lines right now, 800-636-1067. Question on the table for you is, based on your expectations for Daniels, has he been better, what you expected, or worse than you anticipated? And I just can't imagine he's been worse, because he's been pretty solid, unless you thought he was immediately going to just light it up and take the league by storm or something. But it's your answer, not mine. Mm-hmm. 800-636-1067. And if you want to give us a little more detail, what's been better or what's been worse or what's been the same through two games for Jaden Daniels? So you lead the way.
I'm annoying on these kinds of questions because this is what I expected. I was a Jaden Daniels mark. I'm not saying I invented it. But, watching him play, I coveted the skill set, not knowing that Washington would have the number 2 overall pick and that he'd be available to them. And I wanted him throughout the draft process for this reason. I thought day one, bare minimum, he'd be fine. And that doesn't sound like a compliment, but it is. That's what it's meant to be. Because of his skill set, because of the work ethic, because of who he is, I think he is a high floor player, higher floor than we usually see for these quote-unquote dual threats. Right? I think there's the chances of the bottom dropping out and him being an embarrassment were never really there to me. Now, that doesn't mean he's a superstar, an MVP candidate. That's what I hope the high ceiling That's I still see, but that's impossible to get to. Only a couple guys get to do that. But to me, this is what I saw, what I thought. You could spoon feed, you could bring him along slow enough, still have some progress, still have an offense, and slowly build with him. And we've seen exactly that through 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think another way to word it would be, are you've been overwhelmed, underwhelmed, or whelmed? And I've been whelmed.
I've been whelmed.
So I'm with you. Maybe it sounds boring, but this is about what I expected. There have been things that have been better than I expected. A lot of the off-season stuff we talked about yesterday, mm-hmm. from camp to the preseason to the work habits to the studying, have far exceeded my expectations for a young guy. He seems really mature. He seems just grown up in how he acts and operates. By the way, I've been watching the documentary on Prime.
Oh, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Is it good?
It's very good. It's the LSU NIL documentary. Livy Dunn, you may have heard of her. She is a gymnast, mm-hmm. an extremely talented.
Now you follow her, right?
On Instagram?
Yeah.
I do not.
Oh.
If I do, it's only because my wife made me. Right. She's a big fan of gymnastics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Livy Dunn, Jaden Daniels, some other people at LSU. Jaden Daniels is so likable. Uh-huh. Like, it's the best access we've gotten to him behind the scenes, essentially. You know who I really like, who came off very well, and I've only watched a couple episodes? His mom, I really, really like. The whole bit is some of these people at LSU that are student athletes decided to, like, go for money as soon as they could. And his mom essentially said, we are focusing on football. Because you can make a couple million dollars on NIL being, you know, the poster child at LSU mm-hmm. for that law firm. If you go in the top five, you're going to make 30-some million dollars. We're going to focus on being the best quarterback in college football.
Make an
I'm
investment,
paraphrasing,
yeah.
but, like, his mom is sharp. I really like her. But regardless, long story short, I have been impressed by him. And you know, that part of it overall, just him off the field, I think it surpassed my expectations. What I've also liked is he does not really put the ball in harm's way. That's a good thing and a bad thing. Mm-hmm. A small part of me would actually like to see him throw an interception soon. Because I think it'll just let him know, like, oh, nothing happens.
Yeah,
it's like my kid falling
lightning doesn't
down.
Strike. Yeah,
my kid's afraid to, like, ride his bike down the hill because he thinks if he falls over, it's all over. We all die, dude. You're gonna fall over. You're gonna scrape your knee. I'm gonna pick you up. We're gonna be okay. I don't care about a pick or two. I need some big plays too. I need some small window throws, some aggressive percentage looks down the field. So having said that, though, I liked it even in practice when I was out there the preseason. There have not really been many turnover-worthy throws. That's a giveth-taketh-away thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to turn up the faders on that some. But I just think, by and large, we saw four picks last year with a combined 50 touchdowns. He seems to be a guy that does not really turn the ball over a lot. I think that is a healthy, good thing. So that's been impressive. Where I say overall has been about what I expected is, you know, as a passing offense through two games, it hasn't been overly impressive. I thought the second half of the Giants game, as we've talked about a lot, was much better. He stood in the pocket, he played quarterback, distributed the football, did all the things I want to see him do, and I hope he builds on that. The only thing I would say that's a little bit disappointing, and that's too strong of a word, but the only thing I would say that has been I've been a little surprised by negatively, even though I thought he would run a lot, his default setting to not, like, stay in the pocket and throw and to take off and run has been more extreme than I anticipated. And that was a little bit of a concern for me as it was. But I also know it's only been 2 weeks, and it's probably too early to make a judgment on that. But if you're asking me, is there anything so far that you would have, like, graded as this that's been worse than that? He is such a good, accurate passer. It is a part of his game. He does not have to be Lamar to me. Like, he does not have to lead the league in rushing at the quarterback position. He can make all the throws. Part of the intrigue in Jaden Daniels is that he's an awesome thrower of the football. I just like to see him prioritize and major in that a little more, certainly than he did in Tampa Bay and certainly than he did in the first half against the Giants. But maybe, you know, speaking of my son falling off the bike, mm-hmm. maybe seeing what he saw in the second half, that the offense opened up, that Noah Brown got open, that some things went his way, maybe he'll go back to the well more often now moving forward. That's certainly my hope.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all, you know, it's all growth opportunities, right? They're my favorite, one of my favorite economists, and it's very nerdy to have one, but Thomas Sowell has a great saying that I've brought up a billion times, which is there are no solutions, only trade-offs. So if you trade higher production, you're probably going to then have some more negative plays with that. That includes sacks, that includes maybe holding onto the ball too long for a fumble, that includes throwing it into a tight window, which is traffic. Now the ball is tipped, now it's an interception. Now you airmail somebody over the middle when there's a tight window and it sails to a defender for a pick. Even the greatest quarterbacks ever to live have to give up something, right? There's never one size fits all. Very rarely you get a season where it's all perfect, where Pat Mahomes throws for 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and gets sacked in the bottom four or five, you know, percentage of quarterbacks that drop back. That's very, very rare. For the most part, even the great ones, like you look at Aaron Rodgers over the years when he's throwing, again, for 4,800 yards, 45 touchdowns, was one of the league leaders in sacks allowed. That was the trade-off. You had to give something to get something. So you would like some of those danger zone faders to turn up, and I think eventually you will. You learn when to fire, when to tuck it, when to, you know, throw it away. And it's never perfect. You're always pursuing this ghost of perfect quarterback play. But I'm with you in the sense that the trend line is, okay, first sign of danger, even not even danger, even the potential that something might lead to danger, he took off, he ran. Absolutely. Week one. Week two, less so. So now there's a balance, right?
Everybody wants to say, oh, it's been 2 weeks. I get it.
Yeah.
We're talking about the
That's what
weeks.
We're asking about, yeah.
The two games that he's played, what do you think so far? What I think so far is it's been pretty good. It's been a lot better than Caleb Daniels. That guy would be
amazing.
Can you imagine?
How good would he be?
It's been a ton better than Caleb Williams. It's been a ton better than Bo Nix. He doesn't look like a rookie very often. That's all really good. Mostly everything is either what I expected or better. And that would be the one thing is, and it's just my own proclivity. Like, mm-hmm. Not everybody cares about that.
Right.
I'm sure there's someone listening who doesn't mind if he runs for 171 and throws for 105. I think it's good for business. Your receivers are happier. People in the locker room are happier. If you're majoring in passing the football and minoring in wanting to run it. And we'll get there. I believe that. But we got 8 quarters to evaluate so far. 800-636-1067 is the number. Jaden Daniels has played 2 games. Things are going pretty well for him. I would say if the season ended today, and it doesn't, he would be probably the offensive rookie of the year. What's been better? What's been worse? What's been as advertised to this point? We'll get your thoughts next on Grant and Danny.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still football. It's still going out there and having fun and playing the game. But I'll say probably one thing is, you know, just going out there and you know, they got guys that get paid, and we got guys that get paid. So giving my guys a chance to go out there and make plays. And you've seen that towards the second game against the Giants, go out there and make plays so we could help win the game. But, you know, the name of the game, man, you know, we got to put up points, we got to score touchdowns, finish in the red zone, and that's something that we need to do.
That's Jaden Daniels, met with the media today. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. We've both gone on record saying he's been about what we expected.
Mm-hmm.
Question is better, worse, or the same as you expected through 2 games. Let's go to Kevin in D.C. on G&D. What's up, Kev?
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Hey, guys, I got 2 points to make. One, I think he's playing great. For one reason, he's not trying to force the ball anywhere, especially he's not forcing the ball to Terry. Only thing that scares me, he needs to slide instead of flipping.
I just don't think he's going to slide. I don't think he's got that club in the bag. Now, that does not mean he's not going to avoid contact. He will do his best to do that. He does the Lamar Jackson roll, the fall forward thing. As we've seen, though, that could be, you know, somewhat scary. But I think we have to prepare for him taking shots. It's just going to happen inevitably. It'll happen in the pocket when he gets driven into the ground at times. Happened in that Alabama game a couple years ago when he got concussed. It's going to happen out of the pocket. I do agree. He needs to prioritize his health as often as possible. The bottom line is we're through 2 games. That's all there's been is 2 games. He took a helmet-to-helmet shot from a safety coming downhill, and he left the field after getting the wind knocked out of him, trying to get a first down in the first half of a game, taking a huge shot to the ribs.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's just baked in.
Hits are going to happen even if you don't run as part of the quarterback position. The whole point here is to try to limit the devastating ones, to limit that kill shot, so to speak, right? I mean, all it takes is that one moment where you cut back, you're trying to get that extra yard or two or whatever. It's, you know, it's again, it's a trade-off. They're going to be at maybe one or two fewer big plays, one fewer third down converted in week number 5. You get more weeks in theory, right? You're limiting those really big shots where everybody's running full speed.
Do you agree with me to some extent that it's just not going to be?
It's not going to be what I want.
Major priority for him?
No, yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, like on a 1 to 10 scale of how much do you care about avoiding contact? I'd like him to be at a 6, and I think he's kind of always going to be at a 4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not like I'm punting on it or don't care about it. I just think it's inevitable. There's going to be times where he's slow to get up, and you just hope that when he gets banged up, it's, you know, he's able to get right back into the game. The only thing I hate is there's an independent person that can just pull him off the field at any point after one of these hits. And that's the part that worries me, because he doesn't just get to say, I'm fine. He doesn't get to just keep playing if he wants to. That's out of your control when they tell you to go over to that tent. Mike's in Fairfax. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, guys? I love the show as always. Hey, just have a couple quick points if you guys can give me just a couple moments. I agree with you, Grant, regarding the rating. I think he's much better than Caleb so far and Bo. Here's my issue. After and during the first game, I was not thrilled with Kingsbury. And the reason was, especially when they got to the red zone, he was calling plays as if Jaden were a 250-pound fullback. I'm going, what the hell is he doing? You know?
Yeah, this ain't Cam Newton. It's not Josh Allen, man.
Dude, that was insane. Okay, so second, also, with the second game, I was more pleased. Jaden's young. He's a rookie. He doesn't know that this is all he knows is run, go, I'm fast. And he is quick. But what's really going to determine if he's really going to succeed in this game is when Kingsbury opens up the offense. Because right now he's just doing a lot of the short passes to the side, et cetera. Yes, he's thrown a few passes downfield, but not enough to really determine can he read the field the way that the top quality, the guys that really succeed in the NFL read the field. If he can do that and keep away from interceptions and not run as much, he will be awesome. I'm really excited. But guys, look, he's got to stop with the – look, he's got to get hurt. He is going to get
– Well, here's the problem with that, Mike. Thanks for the call. He's not going to stop running, and he shouldn't, because you shouldn't have drafted him if you didn't want him to run. That is the superpower. But if your point is he should avoid contact more, I can agree with you there. It's just – it's a really tough needle to thread, frankly.
Yeah.
For a guy that's going to be running frequently, and he's going to be, and he should be, frankly, to avoid contact. It's football. It's going to happen. He's just got to be smarter. Like, the hit he took helmet to helmet in the first game was a bad one. The hit he took on the ribs, and everyone said, oh, he was getting the first down. He should have. That was awesome. I agree with you if it's the fourth quarter and the game's on the line. I'm not sure if I agree with you in the first quarter of a football game against the Giants, instead of setting up a fourth and one and maybe having to punt it or whatever. But luckily, he just lost his wind, it sounds like. He was on the sideline. He was back in the game. The horizontal passing game, the league is trending that way. We talked a lot about it yesterday. If you want to go back and grab the pod, the way defenses are covering. This now in the secondary, the cover two looks. They're forcing underneath throws. Even by that metric, though, that's not a good enough way to say why they've been so horizontal. 38% of their wide receiver targets have come behind the line of scrimmage. The league average is 11%. You're talking about
they're turning up that dial.
Basically, 4x for them on wide receiver targets behind the line. So that's going to have to change moving forward. But they have not, to their credit, I think this is smart. They haven't asked him to read much out. That's a good thing with a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also not going to really get great results in the passing game until you start asking him to do that. Let's go to Kevin in Arlington. What's up, Kev?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got to admit, I'm a little intrigued and surprised, because again, the jump from college, I don't care if he did throw 40 TDs and 4 picks and, you know, was just so incredible. But the leap is so great. And what I've seen is, first of all, he starts his career against Todd Bowles. And don't think for a minute Todd Bowles, whenever he plays Washington, he wants to make a statement. And he did. And that's a hell of a team, and we're going to see it as they continue to move forward. But by the second half, he was better. And then in the second game, by the second half, he was better. He seems to get better as the game goes on. He's incredibly accurate. He doesn't make foolish decisions, it does not seem, with the ball. He may be foolish or just inexperienced yet in terms of knowing when to get down, how to get down, whatever. But again, second game, the progress I saw was really, really intriguing and exciting. But my concern at this point, other than obviously we're all concerned if he gets hurt, and there's always that possibility, but what's he not seen? To your point earlier, Grant, about how open, if you go back to the All-22, that McCaffrey was. And it just seems to me, because he's good at processing, but it seems he's missing things, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if we're going to get an answer. Maybe it's just, hey, nobody's perfect, and he's just starting out. But
I'm as worried about that yet, Kev, just because how young he is.
And we also don't know if the coaching point that week, for the sake of argument, is against this too high look,
right,
you're supposed to be looking over here. Now, or if it's, dude, you got to see that. We don't know.
Yeah.
It could be anything in between.
Very true. He made a good point, though, something I should have brought up. The accuracy is way better than – I mean, it seemed like a strength of his in college, frankly, but he was also throwing to open receivers a lot in college. Malik Nabers was awesome. Brian Thomas was awesome. Downfield, his accuracy was pretty special statistically. But just watching him even out in practice at camp, it was pretty obvious. Like, ball placement, being accurate, which is such a huge trait, that has absolutely impressed me and far exceeded my expectations, which is a big deal. Zach, Charlottesville, listening on the Odyssey app. What's up?
Hey, boys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
So through two games, I think better than I have expected. Through two games, he gets lumped in with that graphic with Caleb Williams and Bo Nix, where they have zero touchdowns, six picks. You take Jaden Daniels out of that graphic, it looks the same. I would expect him to have maybe some interceptions early on in the year. Now, if you extrapolate this out throughout 17 games, yeah, it doesn't look great. But through two games, I think he's been better than expected. And the caller before me said, you know, you got to think he went up against Todd Bowles in week one. So I think better than expected. You know, I think they're going to get Terry involved. I know that's a big talking point this week. So, that's my thought. Better than expected, and I think the best yet to come.
Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate you.
No
dude.
Doubt about that. He's going to hopefully just keep stacking pennies, you know, game by game, week by week, and we'll see where it gets us in the nation's capital. Ben Standing asked him about Wafflegate today at his press conference. I'm going to tell you what he had to say about all the waffle
stuff that
happened last week. Ben just sent us over some answers from Jaden on Wafflegate. So that should be fun. Next, Frank Schwab's going to stop by the show from Yahoo. Get us ready for Thursday Night Football about 3 hours out on G&D.